Paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Rex Road in the air, headed to OKC to cover the NCAA tournament. He will be back with us tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., so looking forward to that. Preds in action tonight. And they are taking on the Winnipeg Jets. They got a busy week coming up. They'll return home on Thursday for a big game against Seattle. And to help us talk all things Nashville Predators, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Emma Lingen to the program from the Hockey News. Emma, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you taking time to be with me this morning. So, Emma, it's a interesting time for this hockey team right now because they got a huge win last week against Seattle to pull them within 1 point of the playoffs. And you thought, all right, well, the deadline has come and gone, and they go on the road. They get this big win even after a mini sell-off by Barry Trotz. And here they are, 1 point out of a playoff spot. Then they blow a lead to Vancouver and lose, and they lose at Edmonton on the road. And, you know, a week later, they're sitting here 4 points back of Seattle for the playoffs. So, basically, since the calendar flipped to January, Emma, as you know, they've been unable to really gain much traction. Like, they got really hot in November into December, and they've basically been right around 500, I think actually slightly below 500 since the calendar flipped to January. So, with all that in the background, what do you make kind of where they are right now and the inability to gain much traction in the playoff race over the last really couple of months?
Well, quite honestly, I think that inconsistency or that lack of clarity on where they are is your answer as to where they are. I think that even though, yes, the numbers say that technically they are, you know, within reach of a playoff spot, I think that you can't let that deter you from, you know, the reality, which is that I think this is not a playoff team. I think that, you know, Barry Trotz made that decision at the deadline when he sold off the pieces that he did, the ones that are on expiring contracts. I think what's interesting, though, kind of like the parallel that I've noticed, is that we've actually seen this with this team not that long ago. It was the 2022-23 season, and that was the year that Barry Trotz was announced as coming in to replace David Poile. That was the year that they traded Matthias Ekholm and Nino Niederreiter and Mikael Granlund and Tanner Janot, and all those guys got traded. And then on top of that, Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg were both injured.
Yep.
So they had to bring up all of these young kids. That was when, you know, Tommy Novak came up, Evangelista, Igor Afanasyev, guys like that were the ones really driving the bus. And if you'll recall, they were in the playoff race up until the final two games of the season. So it's not like we haven't seen this before. And I think still, you know, unfortunately, that little run may have, you know, kind of led to some, I don't know what the word is, maybe some misconceptions about where exactly this team is. I think, though, that it's what you want to see. You want to see your young kids come up, getting that playing time, getting that exposure in a, you know, a somewhat pressure-filled environment because they are still playing meaningful hockey, and that's important. But I think you shouldn't treat it as more than what it is, which is a valuable experience for these young players who are going to be your future leaders, and that is what you want, is for them to be playing meaningful hockey right now.
Yeah, I think all that's fair, and all that makes a lot of sense. As you know, this is now a situation with Trotz stepping down where you're going to hire a new general manager. And then, you know, I'm really interested to see what path that general manager decides to take. Like when whoever it is that they hire comes in and you're looking at Stamkos with a couple years left on his contract, O'Reilly with 1 year left on his contract, you know, the Marchessault thing, which I think they've been trying to move him for a while. But, you know, how do you view that if you're a prospective general manager coming in? And, like, if you're Bill Haslam, are you open to, like, tearing it down to the studs and rebuilding it or at least somewhat rebuilding it? Do you feel like you're, I don't know, a year or two away from being competitive? Like, all that's really interesting. And in the meantime, Emma, like, if you're Stamkos and O'Reilly, you're looking at this and you're like, okay, well, we want to win right now. You're Yossi. We want to win right now. I guess one of the most interesting parts of this offseason to me, Emma, is going to be how do these veteran players – once there's time, you know, beyond the chaos of a trading deadline, once there's time in the offseason, how do they view where this group is and how that affects their futures individually?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be very interesting to see because, you know, for the first part of that question, I think if you're the prospective general manager, I don't think that you're one or two seasons away from being competitive. I think, unfortunately, we fell into that trap 2 seasons ago when we brought in, you know, guys like Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault. And I think that, you know, that strategy, we tried it, it didn't work. And that's okay. Now we know, but now I think it's time you go the tear it down route. And tear it down, I think, can have a lot of different meanings, honestly. So I think that you can look at that from a bunch of different perspectives. But if you're the veterans, that I'm very interested to see as well, because a lot of these guys, of course, like you said, at the pressure of the trade deadline, while they are still technically in reach of a playoff spot, of course they're not going to want to leave. They're committed to the team and they're committed to what they're building and what they're doing here. But a lot of these guys now, once you get past that pressure and into the off season where it's a little bit more open-ended, I think you're going to need some clarity from whoever the new general manager is to in terms of what exactly the direction is with this team. And if it is tear it down, then I think that's where you try to start moving some of those bigger contracts, assuming that the players actually do want to go try and win somewhere.
What have you thought of Matt Wood at center, who has been pretty productive over the last few games here? Obviously, he's played center, you know, where he was drafted, and they've moved him to the wing. So long term, I don't know whether or not they're going to keep him there, but what do you make of how he's played at center to this point?
I've been really impressed with Matt Wood. I think that he has, I mean, really ever since he came up, the moment hasn't looked too big for him. I think he's been very poised. He's a good leader on the ice. You can see that he's comfortable out there. I think that at center, he's a good playmaker, I think. But again, like you said, I don't know that I would want that to be your long-term solution to the fact that this team has virtually no center depth. And that's honestly why you couldn't trade a guy like Eric Halla at the deadline, because you had no one else to play center. So I think that as a long-term solution, like let's kind of zoom out a little bit and look at how you have beyond him and, you know, eventually Brady Martin, you really don't have center depth in this organization. I think you still need to continue to add to that. But in terms of what he's been able to do in sort of this high-pressure situation, I've been really impressed.
So it was an interesting kind of a tidbit from Pierre LeBrun last week, and we haven't talked about this a whole lot on the show, but I think it is something to monitor over the offseason. Like, basically LeBrun said, you know, if the Predators decide to go a different route with the new general manager coming in and do what we just talked about of maybe tearing it down a little bit, if you're Roman Yossi, like, what does that mean? I mean, it's hard to imagine Roman Yossi playing somewhere else and he's got full control over that. Now, I've said that, you know, it was hard to imagine Shea Weber playing somewhere else too, and he did ultimately. So, like, I just wonder, like, if you're Yossi with a couple years left on your contract and they decide to go rebuild mode this offseason, how do you think he handles that? Like, what do you think comes from Yossi's camp when it comes to, like, obviously he's still a really good player. He's getting paid over $9 million a year, and we're reaching the latter stages of his career where he wants to win. That part of it could be really fascinating this offseason that I don't think a lot of people have thought about yet.
I agree, and I've thought about it quite a bit because I personally, like you said, I mean, bringing up Shea Weber is a good comparison because I, right now, where I'm sitting, just have such a hard time seeing Roman moving on and going to play somewhere else. And, you know, even if the team goes into a full rebuild and whatnot, because he just, it's so hard to imagine that because he has been kind of the face of this team and obviously the captain for so long now. I think that he, of course, he has a family, he has kids, he has a life here. He, you know, not that that's stopped players before from moving on to different teams, but still it's more things to consider, I think. And so I genuinely don't know. I think it's, I personally just have a gut feeling that Roman isn't going to be the type to ask for a trade. I don't think that he's going to go to whoever the new general manager is and say, hey, I want out, like make it happen. But I could see a scenario in which whoever the new GM is maybe comes in and says, hey, we need to free up some cap space. We want to, you know, we have this vision, whatever it is. Would you be interested? And I could see him, you know, being amenable to that. But I don't see Roman being the one who is necessarily going to initiate that conversation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, there, so many people are focused on the obviously the Stamkos, the O'Reilly, the Marchessault part of it. I just thought it was an interesting tidbit from Pierre LeBrun last week. All right, last thing for you here. Obviously, you know, they got a ton of games coming up over the next week here, and we'll, you know, they play Seattle again head-to-head. They play San Jose head-to-head a few times coming up. So those games are going to determine a lot of what we see here. When it comes to kind of this last push here, if they are going to make the playoffs, what has to happen in your mind? Like, who's got to lead the charge for them that maybe either hasn't done it yet or has cooled off? Like, how do you view, if they're getting in the playoffs, what's that going to look like from the Predators' perspective down the stretch?
Well, I mean, not to oversimplify it, but I think it's a lot of it has to come down to kind of the big three that Barry Trotz viewed as sort of the core of this team. And that's Yossi, that's Saros, and it's Forsberg. I think Forsberg has cooled off quite a bit lately, and that's not anything that, you know, I'm necessarily concerned about. He's kind of always been this way. He scores and bursts. We would just hope that one of those bursts is coming around the corner here soon because we haven't seen it in a while. So I think you need Forsberg to be firing on all cylinders. I think you need UC Saros standing on his head because, again, I go back to the 22-23 season when that young group of players came up and it was a very inexperienced team playing in front of him. That's when we saw UC Saros play some of his best hockey, was when he had that young, inexperienced group in front of him. But I think just sort of as a larger conversation, I think the defense really needs to tighten up. I mean, I've been saying that for the last 2 years, honestly. I think that it's not just, you know, yes, Forsberg needs to score and you need your goaltender to stop the shots, but the defense as a unit has really concerned me with this team. And that's a big part of why, you know, even if they were to make the playoffs, I'm not sure how long they'd be able to make a run because the defense is just, it's slow, it's disconnected, and you need to see a little bit more of it, you know, kind of tighten up there.
Well, Emma, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with me this morning. It's going to come quick here, the final 16 games of the regular season, and we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Very welcome. Emma Lincoln with us here on the program from the Hockey News does an outstanding job covering the Nashville Predators. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds. Preds and Jets coming up. And an interesting piece that I saw from The Athletic this morning as it relates to the Preds as well. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Today, Vanderbilt Baseball hosts Indiana at Hawkins Field. First pitch at 2 o'clock. Catch all the action on 94.9 The Fan. Coverage presented by Gary Force Acura. If you need to fill out a bracket for the NCAA men's tournament, head to thegamenashville.com/mayhem and print off your bracket today. Presented by Toyota. Fuel your adrenaline at toyota.com. Toyota, Let's Go Places, also brought to you by Pizona MD and Thompson Machinery. We will have Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 coming up here in just a few minutes. Here in about 10 minutes, we'll get in some college basketball with him. So looking forward to that coming up here in just a few minutes. Thanks to Emma Lingen for being with us in the last segment. Preds are in action tonight, taking on the Winnipeg Jets. It's the final game of their road trip before they're back home on Thursday with a large game against Seattle. Now, a big game tonight. You've got the Predators at 67 points. Seattle is at 71, so you're 4 points back of a playoff spot. You have San Jose in front of you with 70. You have LA in front of you with 71. So there are already three teams in that mix, kind of right above the Predators, one of them being Seattle in that final spot. Well, Winnipeg's right behind you. Winnipeg has 66 points. So if you lose in regulation tonight, you're going to be hopped by Winnipeg in the standings as well. So it's a big game tonight on that front. You know, obviously, as Emma pointed out, there's been an inability to gain any traction for the Predators over the last little bit here. They got a lot of young guys in the lineup. You know, I saw something this morning at The Athletic that's pretty interesting. You know, the goalie tandem's heading down the stretcher. Now, this is a few days ago that Jesse Granger put this out there. And Jesse Granger does a great job at The Athletic. He's kind of focused in on the goaltending part of it. And he covers the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's good stuff. And he stacked up basically like the goalie tandems and put a power ranking evaluating all 32 teams with their tandems. And there's a bunch of different things that go into it. I mean, obviously stats are involved. You know, their career-long performances go into consideration. You know, what have the results looked like this year? There's a lot of things that he kind of factors into this. And I was looking to see where, like, the Saros-Onanen tandem ranked. And I kind of figured it would probably be, you know, middle of the pack, somewhere around there, based on like Saros and what he's done in his career. Coming in out of 32 teams at number 26 in the power rankings is UC Saros and Eustace Onanen. I'll read you the description that Granger put out there. It says, quote, visually, Saros still looks like an elite goalie. His footwork and speed maneuvering around the crease are world class, and yet his numbers are terrible for a second straight season. The Predators are partially to blame, but this could also be a lesson in why some teams shy away from undersized goalies. When they're on their game, they can be as good as any of the 6'4" monsters. But when they're off their game, fewer pucks hit them by happenstance, and the stats can crater more easily. Saros and Dustin Wolf are examples of that this season. They're both incredibly talented and capable of being elite, but smaller goalies playing behind bad teams have no margin for error. So, Ian, what do you think of that, of Saros and Onanen as a tandem? Number 26 on the power rankings for Jesse Granger at The Athletic.
It seems a little bit on the lower side than I would anticipate, 26. Interesting about the whole smaller goalie theory there. I don't know. I feel like I have kind of noticed teams that they shoot high on Saros.
No doubt.
I kind of noticed it during the Olympics. I feel like they like to go high blocker, as is, I don't want to call it quote unquote weak spot, but I feel like high blocker is where teams try to kind of, you know, pick their spots on Saros. So I wonder about the short goalies. You don't see them anymore as
much
lately.
Yeah.
It used to be kind of be the thing, and a tall goalie was the exception.
Yep.
Now it's kind of
they all look like Pecorino.
Now it's kind of the opposite. Yep. Like if you're below 6'2", it's kind of surprising to be a starter. So, well, I'm not sure. I thought Saros played well in the Olympics.
I agree.
I was worried about him at first, but I feel like he kind of turned his play around during the tournament. I wouldn't put any of the Finnish downfall on him whatsoever. So it'll be interesting to see long term how he kind of maintains his athleticism down the stretch. They all say he's such a hard worker.
Yeah.
And and that's great and all, but that can only get you so far.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody questions like the work that Saros puts in or anything like that. Like he's a great teammate, all those things. So like all those things I think are where they need to be. But the numbers, like the numbers are what they are. And how much of that is the team around him? How much of that is him? And, you know, we talked about with Emma a lot of the decisions that the general manager is going to have to make coming into this. Well, I mean, you could add that to the mix. I mean, I don't know what you can do with the contract. First off, he's got full control over whether or not he moves. So there's that. It's also, there's a lot of term left on that contract. So my guess is Saros is going to be here, and the new general manager is going to have to, you know, figure out how to make the team better around him and try to go that route. But like that whole thing is really interesting to me. I mean, we mentioned the LeBron piece from last week of, hey, keep an eye on Yossi this offseason. You know, what this new general manager decides to do when he comes in here and the direction that they go. I mean, there could be a massive domino effect this offseason.
It's pretty obvious that Trotz valued Saros maybe more so than other GMs around the league.
Correct.
As far as what he asked for in trade value, maybe perhaps what he got on the deal for his, for the term, especially.
Yep.
You know, the money-wise, as the cap goes up, doesn't look as bad. But the term is still...
Contract starting at 30 with that term is... Yep. It's a long contract.
It's still up there. And it'll be interesting to see when the new GM comes, like you said, what he thinks about the goalie position and just his overall thought on Saros, because I do feel like he's somewhat polarizing.
Oh, yeah.
As a player. No doubt. So it'll be interesting to see what they do about that. The defense around Saros is interesting this year, considering they spent some resources on Perbix, Haig, bringing some guys in, trying to solidify the decor.
Yeah, but Yossi, when he's been healthy this year, has been good.
He's been better.
I do think their defense is better than it was a year ago. It's still not great.
Is it like a system thing?
Probably some of it.
At this point, Saros should be used to the new system. He should be used to where the shots are coming from. That was like a whole thing when
Brunette doubt his play has dropped. Like the numbers are what they are. Like his play has dropped. How much is he to blame, I guess, is actually the root question of it all. That part of it, I think, is going to be really interesting to try to nail down here. Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 will be with us coming up next. We'll get into some college hoops with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Property managers, if you manage it, they maintain it. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar. Talk a little college basketball. And to help us do that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Steve Lehman to the program from News Channel 5. Steve, good morning, brother. How are we doing?
Robert, good morning. How are you?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. It's a fun week. I mean, Rex Road was with us a little bit earlier in the show. I mean, he's just like a pig in slop, man. I mean, this is just it's right up his alley this week with the NCAA tournament beginning. So let's start, Steve, on the Vanderbilt front. So they obviously two huge wins over the weekend against Tennessee and Florida. They get to the SEC championship game, come up short against Arkansas. What do you think of the job Mark Byington has done as Vanderbilt's a five seed heading into this, and how dangerous do you think this Vanderbilt team is heading into the tournament?
I think he should have been coach of the year in the SEC. I think the job he's done in 2 years to totally make over this program and keep the key pieces from last year and the way he coaches them and the way they play on offense and the types of things they do defensively at times, I just think it's really, really impressive. And I think the resume is really good for this team. I've said it the last couple of days. I think the NCAA selection committee did a really good job with this bracket. I think they got the right 68 teams. I think 99% across the board, they did a really good job with the seeding. But if there is one gripe to the bracket, it's that Vanderbilt is a five seed.
Yep.
I think their resume is way better than that. They are clearly better on paper than the four seeds. And I think that's by what they did in the regular season, the body of work, and the predictive metrics. So I really think they deserve better than the five seed they got. You could have made an argument, especially if they maybe would have won on Sunday, that they could have gotten to the three line. But here's the bottom line. It's kind of a small quibble because they're the number one five seed. They're playing a four seed. Essentially, the only difference you have there is which jerseys you're packing for the game on Saturday if you get to the second round. And I just view this as a team that has a really good path in front of them. I think they'll beat McNeese. I like their matchup against Nebraska in the second round. And we just saw what they did to Florida in the semifinals on Saturday. So I think there is a path here. If Vanderbilt can bottle the way they played over the last couple of weeks, that they could make a run and be deep into that second weekend with maybe a chance to get to the Final Four.
And then there's Tennessee, Steve, which, you know, it's a sixth seed. It's the lowest seed they've been with Rick Barnes as their coach. And in, you know, the second half of the season, when everybody was healthy, it looked like they were figuring some stuff out. I mean, other than blowing leads to Kentucky, which they did a couple of times, they started to play really well. Then Ament got hurt. Obviously, he's back now. There's a lot of inconsistency offensively with Tennessee, but they still have a lot of talent on their team. So what do you make of Tennessee as a sixth seed and maybe their path heading forward here?
Yeah, it's interesting, Robbie. Actually, if you look at the bracket and the underseeded teams, and I think there's way less of a gripe here, but Tennessee is actually probably the second most underseeded team based off of the predictive metrics.
Yeah.
They're pretty much 16 or 17 right on that 4-5 cut line the way you look at it, and obviously they get a sixth seed in the tournament. Now, I think that's right based off of the way they played at the end of the season and really the whole body of work for them. But the real question to me is, by losing on Friday and having a full week to prepare, can they get a 100% Nate Amat this week? And can they get back to the way they played when they won 8 of 9 games in late January into February? I think it's possible, and that team can make a run. The way they played down the stretch of the season, I don't see it against the path they have. I think they're probably fine in that first game, whoever wins the first 4 game in the matchup. I just think they'll be tougher than either one of those teams. But that Virginia team in the second round, that's a really, really good team, coached well by Ryan Odom. I think that's a matchup problem for them. And the rest of that region is pretty difficult as well. So to me, it comes down to, can they hold on to the basketball? Can Nate Ament be 100% and take a little bit of the pressure off of Jacoby Gillespie? He is a stud, Robbie, but you can't ask him to shoot the ball 20 times and most of them be at the end of the shot clock and all that. If they can hold on to the ball and Nate Ament gets back to being a superstar-level freshman, they've got a shot. But that's a big ask in 1 week's time.
Steve Lehman with us here on the program. So, Steve, we've talked about this on the show. And now that the bracket has come out, I think it's gaining more attention nationally. But the job that Nolan Smith has done at Tennessee State, first off, the story of when he got hired and just how quickly that's turned here. But they play really well throughout the season. They're in the tournament. They're the 15 seed taking on Iowa State. And I know you got the chance to talk to Nolan Smith the other day. What do you make of just that story and what he's done being hired in July of this past year?
Well, I think that's as much of the story as anything here. When you think about it, Robbie, Tennessee State lost Penny Collins in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
Well after the transfer portal and most things that happen in the offseason and the typical flow of getting a new coach. And Nolan Smith came in and he was able to convince every guy in that locker room that this is where they belonged, that they still had a chance to accomplish all of their dreams, and frankly said, we're going to be better. We're going to go out, and you see those banners up there and the one that says 1994 for the last time that you made the NCAA tournament. That's what we're going to do this year. And he got them all to buy in right from the beginning. They made some changes to what they do defensively, and they just got better and better as the season goes along. And the thing I love about them, Robbie, is they've had to play pressure-packed basketball down the stretch of the year. If you go back to the last couple of weeks of the regular season, with 4 games left, with 2 games a week in the conference, they basically were set up where they had to win the first 2 to give themselves a shot in the last week of the regular season. And then they went to the road and they had to win both of those to get a share of the conference title, and they won them. And then they go to Evansville in the conference tournament, and you got to win both of those games to cut down the nets and get that automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. And that's exactly what they did. They did it with a streak here at the end of the season, playing really hot. They've got guards that can bother you defensively and can fill it up on the offensive end. Now, it is an enormous task to tackle this Iowa State team, but there's no pressure on them. So let's just go play, have a lot of fun in St. Louis on Friday, and let the chips fall where they may.
So, Steve, obviously Casey Alexander, somebody you've worked really closely with over the last few years, he takes the job at Kansas State. And look, I'm really happy for him. I'm really interested to see how this goes here at K-State. He did a great job at Belmont, as you know. What do you make of this opportunity for Casey Alexander taking the Kansas State job?
Yeah, number one, I love Casey. He's one of my dear friends. So I am fired up for him to have this opportunity to compete at the highest level at a place that will support the basketball program with the resources that an autonomous four, a power four, however you want to say it, league can do. You know, he's going to have a huge assistant pool. He's going to have huge money in terms of revenue share and name, image, and likeness packages that they can offer to the team. And that will allow him to do what he wants to do. And if you heard him talk yesterday, Robbie, the things he said about K-State, I think stand out for the reason why this move would be made. Number one, he was met in the building where they did the introduction with hundreds of people for the introductory press conference. Basically, everybody who was invited to come came, because that's how much it matters in Manhattan, Kansas. But the bigger points he said was, it's well documented that we've lost some really good players at Belmont over the years just because there was no way that we would be able to keep them financially, because they got paid big-time dollars to go to places like K-State. And that's the thing that he gets now, is if he builds that program from the ground up and has a program based off of development like it was at Belmont, he's not going to automatically lose every Will Richard and Jacoby Gillespie and Cade Tyson and Malik Dia to the highest bidder. He can keep some of those guys and keep the continuity in his program. And then the second part here that, frankly, Robbie, I don't think had been talked about enough, is going back to his days at Lipscomb, Casey Alexander has 10 straight 20-win seasons. There are a handful of coaches at any level in the country that can say that. But most of those other guys are all at jobs that you get to 20 wins, you're automatically into the NCAA tournament. And Casey in that time earned two bids. One at Lipscomb and the other one at Belmont in the year that the tournament was canceled by COVID. So in 10 straight 20-win seasons, he had the pleasure of coaching in the tournament for one game. If he goes to K-State and has 10 straight 20-win seasons, he not only will be in the tournament every year, they'll be building statues outside. And so that's just the difference in the job. And for that reason, I'm so excited for him to have the opportunity, because I believe X's and O's wise, he's one of the truly best coaches in America.
Yeah, I'm really happy for him. I'm very interested to see how it goes there. All right, Steve, last thing for you, and I may be putting you on the spot here. I'm sorry. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a national championship pick here for the tournament?
I do. I think I'm going to go with Arizona. Okay. I reserve the right to back off of that, because I'll be honest, I haven't totally filled out a bracket
Same.
At this point. But I will say this, Robbie. I think we're looking at a lot of chalk. We had four number ones last year. I don't know if you get four number ones again, but it is a field, I think because of the rev share in the NIL, it is a big difference as you look through the bracket. Largest average spread for the 5-12 line, 4-13 line, and 3-14 line in the history of the tournament. So you may not see a ton of those mid-major upsets that we all love in the first weekend of the tournament, but I think that will make for a really good second weekend with a lot of the top seeds advancing. And if you look at it, I think the top three number ones are historically good in the metrics. So I think Duke, Michigan, and Arizona all make the Final Four. I'm kind of thinking the South is the region where there could be a little chaos. And I do like Vandy. I'm taking Vandy to the Elite Eight there. I haven't totally decided whether it'll be Houston or Illinois who plays them and probably ultimately goes to the Final Four for me. But the reason I'm taking Arizona is I think Arizona got the best path of anyone in the West. I think that's the weakest region to get out of. And right now there's an injury question for both Duke and Michigan in the backcourt. Arizona is completely healthy. I think they're going back to Indianapolis, where they won in 1997, and almost 30 years later, I think they cut down the nets like Mike Bibby and Jason Terry and those guys did.
Yep, seems to be a very popular pick. I think Rex Road is riding with you there, so we'll see how that all plays out. Steve, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Going to be a really fun week as the tournament gets underway, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Well, now I got to change my pick if you tell me that Rex Road took him.
He is the nation's leading bracketologist.
Wow. Well, I appreciate that. I enjoyed comparing notes with him, and I enjoyed talking with you this morning, Robbie. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you, man. Steve Lehman from News Channel 5. our guest here on the program. We'll wrap the show up coming up next. Take your thoughts on the NCAA tournament. We got some Preds thoughts to get to. We got thoughts from the Jeremiah Love discussion we had earlier in the show. We'll wrap it all up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5 The Game. Raise a glass with Tennessee Brew Works, proud partner and official craft beer of the football offseason coverage here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day. Here on Robbie and Rex Road, we are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Steve Lehman for being with us in the last segment. Next man up is coming up next. We'll see if Jake Lyman acknowledges today the number one bracketologist in the United States of America. Or I guess, as Ian, he put it more accurately today, apparently there's a site that's ranked all this.
Yes.
And Rex Road's coming in at 195th. Not quite the number one that I was looking for.
Yeah, tough rankings there.
195th?
Yeah.
First off, how many bracketologists are there?
I was going to say, that's a lot of bracketologists. 200 and something.
How many do we need?
I think just Joe. I think just one.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, maybe he can just create a monopoly. Somehow.
Ian, have you filled out your bracket yet?
I have not. I don't think I'm going to completely fill out a bracket. Okay. I've enjoyed over the years not filling out a bracket more so than filling out a bracket.
Just being able to watch it?
Just watch it and enjoy the madness for the madness and not really have in the moment just kind of feel for who I want to win and not have to worry about cheering for somebody because I picked them in my bracket. I used to kind of do that with fantasy football. I was out on fantasy football for a long time because it was affecting the way I watched the games.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't as fun. Like, I wasn't able to watch the game just to watch the game and enjoy how it broke, how it went, and just root for who I kind of feel like in the moment. You know, it was hard to root for the Titans to win, but you still want Christian McCaffrey to have a good game. So I kind of bailed on fantasy football. I've come back to fantasy. I have not come back yet to the brackets. So we'll see.
I'm really trying to talk myself into a deep run for California Baptist. I don't know if I'm going to be able to fully get myself there.
Yeah, that'd be a tough one for a deep run. But, I don't know. I guess it kind of feels like the favorites are going to take control again.
Well, it's
going to
be interesting. Like, that's with all the NIL stuff and, you know, you heard – Steve talk about it there with Casey Alexander. Like, you build up this good roster and these players at Belmont, and then all of a sudden you lose them. Like, it's really fascinating how that's going to affect the tournament moving forward. I mean, we see a lot of upsets, and I still stand by this. I think people love the upsets this week.
Yeah.
And then basically beyond that, it's like, all right, well, let's see the best teams.
We want to see the best teams.
I think you're going to see less upsets moving forward, but just because these guys who in the past, you know, hung around on programs for 2-3 years and maybe were much better players.
Fourth-year guys, yeah.
They're gone. Like, people identify them and they pay them and they go to, you know, Arkansas or whatever it is.
With the smaller schools, you did see that in the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, your high-end elite teams with younger players versus maybe smaller school teams with very experienced players, fifth-year seniors, all that kind of stuff, who could maybe shoot but didn't really know.
There's still some of that, but it's just not as much.
And the top in this league, or this year in general in college basketball, the top has just been so good.
Yep.
It's been pretty much the same 10-8 teams throughout the entire year. A few slip-ups here and there, but I kind of feel like I'm going, as far as like a Final Four, give me like a UConn, Houston, Michigan, Arizona.
Okay.
You know, a couple of twos and a couple of ones. It'll be something like that.
Well, it's going to be fun. Get started, I guess, technically today with the first four games, and then we're at it coming up on Thursday. Rex Rowe will be back with us tomorrow live from Oklahoma City as Vanderbilt prepares to play in their first-round matchup against McNeese. That does it for us today. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.